Good morning. Hey, grab your Bibles, grab a sermon outline. We're going to dive in this morning. We've got some really significant stuff to talk about this morning. Last week, we started a new sermon series called The Lost Virtue. And we discovered that the lost virtue is the virtue of gratitude. In fact, in most places, it's not even listed as a virtue because people overlook it. And yet, when you begin to do a study of Scripture and of the world and of life in general, you come to an understanding that it's not just a virtue, it's the mother of virtues. And so we talked about that last week and gave you an assignment that each day you would take time to write down the things that you complained about and the things that you were grateful for. Anybody do that? How many of you guys, as you did that, you felt like you thought you were more grateful than you really are? A couple of you got a couple emails to that effect. And maybe some of you experienced what I experienced this week is really, the more I looked forward to kind of having to write that down, here's the things I complained about, the less I actually complained. I got a text message from one of you guys that said, you quit listening to the news and it cut your complaining in half. It was very interesting. Well, open your Bibles to Luke chapter 17. We're going to look at a very important parable and a very important story today. While you're turning there, let me just reinforce something for you. You know, we believe that all truth is God's truth. In other words, if it's true, it comes from God, okay? So when we look at science and psychology, a lot of times that gives us insight into the things that God has already said are true. And there's been a number of studies done recently on this topic of gratitude. In fact, most of the studies are not done by people that are coming from religious backgrounds. The foremost expert in this area is actually an atheist. But what they're discovering is incredible. He says, science is now proving feeling grateful can actually make us healthier, literally. Practicing gratitude, acknowledging the blessings in our lives, and making it a point to recognize the good things can change us positively. We'll sleep better and exercise more. We'll feel more optimistic, be more alert and active. And if we do this over a period of time, we'll realize that we're making progress toward our life goals. In one of these recent studies, the results that they came up with after they worked with a group of people on this whole gratitude issue is people who focused on gratitude were just flat out happier. They saw life in favorable terms. They reported fewer negative physical symptoms, such as headaches or colds. They were active in ways that were good for them. They spent almost an hour and a half more per week exercising than those who focused on hassles. Plain and simple, those who were grateful had a higher quality of life. It's not just something that makes people happy, like a positive thinking, optimistic kind of thing. Feeling gratitude really gets people to do something more pro-social, more compassionate. People in their studies, and we're talking about a number of studies over the last 10 to 15 years, people over their studies had a better handle on materialism. They had a better work ethic. They had a better engagement socially. They were more apt to help other people. And generally, they were physically more healthy. So last week, when I said that gratitude is not some kind of a guilt trip duty that we owe to God, it's actually a good gift from a loving God who gives it to us for our benefit. God wants you to experience His love. And one of the ways you experience His love is through gratitude. Now, today, I want to talk about one simple action, okay? One simple activity that if you will put this into place, it will change the trajectory of your life in marvelous, marvelous ways. Now, we all understand at some level the power of words, the power of expression. I want to illustrate that today. We've been spending a little bit of time in Mayberry the last couple weeks, and this week we're going to go back to Mayberry again, and I want you to see a situation where Malcolm, the butler who crashes into a truck in Mayberry and destroys a truck and some crates and has to pay off his debt, is invited by Sheriff Andy Taylor to come and be his personal valet for the week to pay off his debt. Unfortunately, his British etiquette requires them to bathe during the week, to dress for supper, to exercise proper manners, all of which in a North Carolina small town doesn't go so well. And so Andy's fed up with it. Watch what happens.
Well, Andy, if he makes you all that uncomfortable, why don't you just come right out and tell him?
I'm going to. He's about to drive me crazy. And I'll see you.
All right, good night, Andy.
It sure is fun having you here, Mr. Malcolm.
Well, young man, I'll tell you something. It's been the nicest part of my holiday. And I'm very thankful to you and your dad.
How come?
Well, just think. I might have traveled the length and breadth of America without ever finding out what Americans were really like. I used to think you were quite different, you know. And I came into your home and saw how you lived. And you're not different at all, really. And if it hadn't been for your dad, none of this would have been possible. And looking after you and your dad has made me very, very happy. Ready? 1, 2, 3. Whee! How's that?
Oh, boy, a treat! Thanks, Mr. Malcolm.
You're very
well.
Oh,
good evening, sir.
Hi, Pop. Look what Mr. Malcolm made.
Yeah, that's something.
Nothing just to do, Dad.
Hey, look at the time, young man. Come on, off to Kip.
Good night, Pop.
Good night.
Can I get you some supper, sir? Have some lovely bubble and squeak.
Oh, no, thank you. I had something down.
Oh, right. I'll just look after the young man, then.
These in the car.
Thanks.
Did you tell him?
Now you pop into bed and I'll fetch the milk.
Malcolm's about as nice a guy as you'd ever want to meet, but I still think you ought to come right out and tell him.
Well, I'll figure something.
It's either that or you're going to have to spend the rest of the week putting up with all kinds of nonsense. Hmm. Sounds to me like the guy's just making a grade A pest of himself. Why don't you tell him to forget the whole deal and be on his way?
Oh, I don't know, Barney. This is one of those things where you have to kind of wait for the right moment. And when the right moment comes, I'll try to figure some way to tell him.
Power of expression. Words that change the trajectory of a person's relationship, positively or negatively, and gratitude expressed or gratitude unexpressed will make a huge difference in your life. That's what we're going to talk about today. So in Luke chapter 17, there's really these two very interesting situations that are juxtaposed together. Luke brings these two things together. One is a parable, and the other one is a story of the 10 lepers. Now, as we look at these together, you're going to have to kind of work with me, think with me today, because what Jesus says here and what he illustrates here is so picturesque of life. And we're going to break these things down and take them apart a little bit and explain them to you. But today you're going to see something from Scripture that's just mind-boggling. First of all, we're going to start out with the parable of the unworthy servant. Maybe one of the parables that's one of the least understood in all of Scripture. What we're going to learn from this parable is that there are really two ways to approach life. The first way is the transactional approach. The transactional approach to life. And I believe this is the way most of us live. Now look what Jesus says. He says, suppose one of you had a servant plowing or looking after the sheep. Would he say to the servant when he comes in from the field, come along now, sit down to eat? Would he not rather say, prepare my supper, get yourself ready, and wait on me while I eat and drink, and after that you may eat and drink? Would he thank the servant because he did what he was told to do? Now, interesting parable. What Jesus is saying is, let's think about this. If you were a person and you had wealth, so that you owned a field that needed to be cultivated, or you owned sheep that needed to be tended to, and you went out and you hired a servant to do that. So you made a transactional agreement. You come and you take care of my stuff, and you take care of me, and in exchange for that, I will give you money and I will give you food. Okay? And the servant says, hey man, I'm grateful to have a job. That'd be great. I'll take the job, okay? So you hire that guy. What would your expectations be of what he would do? In the transactional approach to life, you would expect that he would obey you. Like if you sent him out to work, he would do the work, right? And when it came time for supper, he would fix supper. And for that, he would get his meal and he would get his money, okay? That's kind of how life works, right? Now, it would be really unusual to think that the servant would, or that the master would feel obligated, in addition to paying him, to treat him like a family member. Well, no, you work so hard today, you just sit down here, let me take care of everything for you. Let me get your napkins, let me get your plates. I've been cooking all day because my main goal in life now is to treat you well because I hired you to work for me, and therefore I owe you something. Well, what does he owe him? He owes him what they agreed on. He owes him his money. He owes him his meal and nothing more. Now, look at this next sentence that Jesus says. In verse 10, he says something that feels pretty harsh. He says, so you also, when you have done everything you were told to do, should say, we are unworthy servants. We have only done our duty. That's harsh. Now, why does Jesus say this? Because in life, the transactional approach is very simple. You do what you're told, and for that, you receive your benefits. So if all you ever do is simply do your job, do your duty, then at the end of the day, all you could ever expect is to get paid for what you did, receive the benefits for what you did. That's all you should ever expect. So why do we need to tell ourselves on a regular basis that if I do the minimum, my part of the transaction, and other people give me the reward that I earned, or that God gives me the reward that I earned, why do I need to tell myself, hey, you're an unworthy servant. You just did the minimum. You just did your job. Why do I need to tell myself that? Because Jesus knows something about the human heart. You know what that is? We all have a tendency to think in terms of entitlement. And entitlement is the greatest enemy of joy and happiness in this world. Entitlement, thinking that somebody owes me something, that I should get more, that I deserve more, that is an enemy to my happiness. That's the transactional approach to life. Most of us don't want to invest any more than what we've committed to invest, but we oftentimes think that we ought to get more than what we've invested. We think we deserve more than what we've actually put out. And Jesus is warning us here that in the transactional approach of life, we have a tendency to think somebody owes us something, and that will ruin your quality of life and your relationships. Now, what's interesting is Jesus then goes on to show how this works in real life. And that's the story of the 10 lepers. In the story of the 10 lepers, we're going to see that 9 of them understand the transactional approach. That's the way they live, and they get what they earn, okay? One of them understands life in a different way. He understands the transcendent approach to life, where everything that I do in relationship is actually bigger than just, I did it, I get what I deserve from it. Look what happens. Really interesting. Now, on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus was traveling around the border between Samaria and Galilee. So he's on a Jewish-Samaritan border. And as he was going into the village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, "Jesus, Master, have pity on us." So the scene is Jesus is heading into a village, and on the outskirts of the village, there's these 10 men that are gathered together. Now, we're going to find out later, at least one of them is a Samaritan. The rest of them are probably Jews. Misery loves company, and they have leprosy. Now, leprosy in the ancient world was some kind of a skin disease that was contagious, usually manifest itself on the outside, and if you got leprosy, you were not allowed to be in the temple or around people. And so lepers were segregated from society. They lived apart. They usually formed their own bands, and they typically survived by begging. So they might stand away from people because they were required not to come close because they could pass on the disease. They were ostracized, and they would stand at a distance, and usually they would ask for help, and a passerby might stop and leave a loaf of bread or stop and leave a little bit of meat or some vegetables there, and then the passerby would go on and they would come get it. But in this case, they understand that the passerby is somebody significant. It's Jesus himself. Now, Jesus has already healed people with this particular disease. That news has spread. And so they call out to Jesus. They're asking for mercy, and they're asking that he would heal them. Now, I want you to notice the parallel between the parable and the story. In the story, when they call out to Jesus, in verse 13, they call out in a loud voice, "Jesus, Master, have pity on us." In other words, they identify Jesus as the one who possesses the power to give benefits. And they're calling out to the one who is in charge, the master, the boss, the one who has the power to give benefits, and they're asking for pity. And Jesus responds, "When he saw them, he said, 'Go, show yourself to the priests.' And as they went, they were cleansed." So what Jesus tells them to do is exercise faith. While you're still in your condition of leprosy, you need to go to the priest. Now, the purpose of going to the priest was to go when the leprosy was healed, to show that there were no more spots, there were no more sores, there was no more oozing, I'm not no longer contagious. And once the priest pronounced them clean, he was like the medical worker, once the priest pronounced them clean, they could come back into the village, they could be back around people. So Jesus tells them, listen, go show yourself to the priest. And these guys exercise faith. They start to go. And while they're walking along the road, they get better. I don't know what that scene looked like, but it was probably a pretty joyous scene. These guys who had been separated from family and friends are walking back, and they begin to notice that, like, the skin disease is clearing up. The sores are quit oozing. I don't smell like I did a few minutes ago. There's not pus coming out of my head. You know, I'm looking better. You're looking better. Look, we've been healed. This is a miracle. And so they exercised faith. They did what they were told to do, and they received the benefit, okay? Same thing again, obedience, benefit, the transactional approach to life, except for one of them. One of them does something different. One of them, verse 15, when he saw that he was healed, he came back praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him, and he was a Samaritan. Jesus asked, "Were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner?" Then he said to him, "Rise and go. Your faith has made you well." What transpires in this passage is not only does he receive the benefits, but he returns to express gratitude to the benefit giver. He returns to express gratitude to the benefit giver. And when he expresses gratitude to the benefit giver, he enters into a relational encounter that's bigger than what happened. Now, the reason why I want you guys to see this is because gratitude moves us from simply receiving benefits. It moves us into the category of recognizing the benefit giver. And when we interact with that benefit giver, we enter into a completely larger, a much bigger relational transaction that would have never taken place if we wouldn't have expressed those benefits. Let me share a story with you that I think really illustrates this. It's one of my all-time favorite stories from Tony Campolo. It's about a boy named Teddy Stollard. Teddy Stollard certainly qualified as one of the least. Disinterested in school, musty, wrinkled clothes, hair never combed. One of those kids in school with a deadpan face, expressionless, sort of glassy, unfocused stare. When Miss Thompson spoke to Teddy, he always answered in monosyllables. Unattractive, unmotivated, and distant, he was just plain hard to like. Even though his teacher said she loved all her class the same, down inside she wasn't being completely truthful. Whenever she marked Teddy's papers, she got a certain perverse pleasure out of putting X's next to the wrong answers, and when she put the F's on the top of the papers, she always did it with a flair. She should have known better. She had Teddy's records, and she knew more about him than she wanted to admit. And here's what the record said. First grade, Teddy shows promise with his work and aptitude, but poor home situation. Second grade, Teddy could do better. Mother seriously ill. He receives little help at home. Third grade, Teddy's a good boy, but too serious. He's a slow learner. His mother died this past year. Fourth grade, Teddy is very slow but well-behaved. His father shows no interest. Christmas came, and the boys and girls in Miss Thompson's class brought her Christmas presents. They piled their presents on her desk and crowded around to watch her open them. Among the presents was one from Teddy Stollard. She was surprised that he had bought her a gift, but he had. Teddy's gift was wrapped in brown paper and held together with scotch tape. On the paper were written the simple words, "For Miss Thompson," from Teddy. When she opened Teddy's present, out fell a gaudy rhinestone bracelet with half the stones missing and a bottle of cheap perfume. The other boys and girls began to giggle and smirk over Teddy's gift, but Miss Thompson at least had enough sense to silence them by immediately putting on the bracelet and putting on some of the perfume on her wrist, holding her wrist up for the children to smell. She says, "Doesn't it smell lovely?" And the other children, taking their cues from the teacher, readily agreed with oohs and ahs. At the end of the day, when the school was over and the other children had left, Teddy lingered behind. He slowly came over to her desk and said softly, Miss Thompson, you smell just like my mother. And her bracelet looks really pretty on you too. I'm glad you like my presents." When Teddy left, Miss Thompson got down on her knees and asked God to forgive her. The next day when the children came to school, they were welcomed by a new teacher. Miss Thompson had become a different person. She was no longer just a teacher. She'd become an agent of God. She was now a person committed to loving her children and doing things for them that would live on after her. She helped all the children, but especially she helped the slow ones, and especially Teddy Stollard. By the end of the school year, Teddy showed dramatic improvement. He'd caught up with most of the students and was even ahead of some of them. She didn't hear from Teddy for a long time. Then one day, she received a note that read, "Dear Miss Thompson, I wanted you to be the first to know I'll be graduating second in my class. Love, Teddy Stollard." 4 years later came another note. "Dear Miss Thompson, they just told me I'd be graduating first in my class, and I wanted you to be the first to know. The university's not been easy, but I liked it. Love, Teddy Stollert. And 4 years later, dear Miss Thompson, as of today, I am Theodore Stollert, M.D. How about that? I want you to be the first to know. I'm getting married next month, the 27th to be exact. I want you to come and sit where my mother would sit if she were alive. You are the only family I have now. Dad died last year. Love, Teddy Stollert. Miss Thompson went to the wedding and sat where Teddy's mother would have sat. She deserved to sit there. She had done something for Teddy that he could never forget. Two people who intersect at the point of gratitude, and both of their lives are changed for eternity. Both of their lives move in a different direction. Here's a young boy that says thank you to a teacher for caring enough to tell the other kids that I am worth something. And the teacher, when she receives that, understands that her role in life is much bigger than reading and writing and arithmetic. Her role in life is the destiny of these children, and that she can make an eternal impact. And their lives then, from that point forward, begin to intertwine. And here you have a leper who comes back healed, and he kneels at the feet of Jesus. And look carefully at what Jesus says. He says to him, "Go in peace. Your faith has made you whole," or made you well. The word there, sozo, is the word for saved. It has bigger implications. It's not just the salvation of his body in this case. He's got a new trajectory. He's got a relationship with the living Son of God. He is now in relationship with Jesus, much bigger than his body. It's a change of his life. And in that moment, two men come face to face. One is a broken man who's now been healed, and the other is the Almighty Creator of heaven and earth. And there's a transaction that takes place that changes them forever. You see, what we tend not to understand is that the best part of gratitude is the bond that it builds with the person who's helped us when we have returned in gratitude and thanksgiving. And the bond of that relationship gives a quality to life that is significantly better than any of the things that we might earn in the transactional approach to life. And that's why Jesus is saying, guys, don't pat yourself on the back when you simply follow through on your responsibilities and then turn with this entitlement mentality and ask for more. Tell yourself repeatedly, if all I ever do is just what I'm supposed to do, I'm just doing the minimum. But when I enter into gratitude for the people that have helped me along the way, now things move into a new dimension that changes everything. So let's just pause now, and I want to take a few moments to look at the barriers. Like, why do we not express gratitude? I believe there are three there on your outline there. The first barrier to expressing gratitude is one we've been talking about, and that's that we have a tendency to adopt an entitlement mentality. We kind of think in terms of, God, you owe me. Boss, you owe me. Parents, you owe me. Society, you owe me. In other words, what tends to happen is, in a world where we do not recognize the benefits that we've received from other people, we have a tendency to feel like our life is not going well. It's not as good as it should be. When we feel it's not going as good as it should be, we have a tendency to look around and say, who out there has the power in our mind to make it feel like it's going better? And so, teenagers, you look at mom and dad. And you say, you know, my life doesn't feel that happy. So, mom and dad, what are you not providing for me that would make my life happy? So, you know, you should be getting me that new iPhone. You should be getting me the full data plan. You know, you should be. Because if you did that, if you were providing for that, that would probably fill up this feeling inside that I don't have all that I want. You know, boss, if you would just give me a better financial package, if you would just put that into my contract, then somehow my life would feel better. In other words, because I don't feel the benefits, I don't express gratitude, I don't feel the benefits, therefore I start to look for somebody else who may be able to fill that in, and I begin to become disappointed with them. And over time, we literally can develop this victim mentality. You know, it's my spouse that's not giving me what I need to be happy. It's my boss. It's my teachers. It's God Himself. God, what are you not doing for me that you could be doing to make life better for me? The entitlement mentality tends to get in the way. And that's why Jesus said, tell yourself often, if all I've done is my duty, I haven't done much. And then look for those who you can return the favor to. Show gratitude. Second, I think jumps out of this passage is that we have a tendency to be hurrying to the next big thing. We have a tendency to be hurrying to the next big thing. I mean, can you think about those lepers? Like, I don't know about you, but there's a part of me that doesn't blame them for not coming back. Think if you had missed your child's second, third, fourth, and fifth birthday because you were like an outcast with this disease. And now all of a sudden, you're capable of going home. Like you can run home and you can hug your child. You can say, do you remember me? I'm your dad. Like that's a pretty big thing, right? You know, Jesus, He heals people all the time. He's probably used to that. I don't need to go back for His benefit. I got places to go. I got things to do. I mean, some of these guys may have been just devout worshipers of God and for whatever number of years had not been able to go into the temple. And they want to go into the temple and they want to worship God. They got big things to do. And what we have a tendency to forget is that this amazing relationship that happens when we express gratitude that transpires between two people is also a very big thing. Because what it does in that moment is it draws us into a deeper long-term connection with the person we're expressing gratitude, which enhances their life and enhances our life. But we have a tendency to be hurrying on to the next big thing. So I'm going to challenge you before the morning's over. Who are the people that you've hurried past because you've got a life to live and you haven't stopped to express gratitude? The third barrier that I feel like is from this passage is the downplaying the significance of the help. The downplaying the significance of the help. Hey, like the creator of heaven and earth, He can do this. It's easy for Him to do that. It's not that big of a deal to Him. Why would I go back and say I'm thankful? And we have a tendency to downplay the significance of the help that we receive from other people. So, do you believe that you begin life with a deficit? You believe you begin life with a deficit? You should. Because you had nothing to do with getting here. And I'm not talking about your parents either. Even though you owe them a debt of gratitude, right? You begin with life as a gift from the Creator of heaven and earth that gave it to you. You grow up with people who provide for you, take care of your needs, watch over you. All through life, there's always a quotient to your accomplishment that includes factors of other people. So let's just test ourselves right now, okay? Think of the greatest accomplishment that you personally have had. Thing you're most proud of. You got it in your head? She went out with me Friday night. Greatest accomplishment, right? Think of the greatest accomplishment. I landed that job. I got my PhD. You know, I dunked a basketball at age 40. Think of your greatest accomplishment. You know, what's your greatest accomplishment? Think of it, okay? Now, what I want you to do is ask yourself the question, who are the people that had they not been part of my life, I would not have succeeded to make that accomplishment? Who are the people? You got your PhD? Who was the professor that helped you? Who was the school that admitted you? Who were the donors that put up the money to found that school in the first place so that it could actually exist? You know, what happens is we have a tendency to think that 100% of our accomplishments came from us. And we certainly work. We put effort into it. We have a tendency to think 100% of our accomplishments came from us. But you know what? When you start thinking about all the people on whose shoulders that we have stood over the years to be able to get where we are today, 10%, 15%, 5%, you know, there's a history of people that have paved the way for us. The tendency to think that we don't need help robs us of a significant portion of our gratitude toward one another. So here's my challenge this week. My challenge for this week is that you would do two things. First of all, you would identify somebody. By the way, this is on your outline so you can refresh yourself. You would identify someone in your life that deserves to hear your gratitude. Like they've done something and you need to say thank you. And I'm going to tell you how to do this because a lot of you guys are going to back off when I tell you how to do this. But I'm going to tell you how to do this. This is the right way to do it. What I would like you to do is take the time to actually write out your gratitude. Put it on paper. Use some eloquence here. Write down, here's what I am thankful for. This is what you did for me. Write it out. And then the second part of it is go to that person and read to them what you wrote. You may have to do it long distance over the telephone, but I'm not talking about text message, hey, Ma, thanks. You know, I'm not talking about an email, you know, Prof, thanks. I'm talking about a personal encounter, because what I want you to do is I want you to get the relationship thing going, okay? Now, in one of the recent studies on this, people who've done this exercise, their happiness, based on the scale that they use, has gone up about 10%. And the effect of this kind of transaction lasts a month in most cases. We're talking about power. In many cases, it also creates a relational bond that takes on a new direction. So I challenge you to do this, and then send me an email. Let me know how it went. Okay? Second thing is I'd like you to do the same thing with God. I'd like you to take some time to write down things that God, you're thankful for, that God's done in your life, and put that down. Now, some of you guys are artistic. You could put it in the form of a song. Some of you could put it in poetry. Some of you guys might be able to write it in some kind of a short story. Some of you guys may be able to paint it or sculpt it. I don't know what you can do with it. Some of you guys may be like me, you know, really challenged when it comes to anything good. So you just can kind of write the words out. But put something on paper about your relationship with God that you're thankful for, and then spend some time thanking Him. I believe a lot of us in our hearts, really deep down in our hearts, wonder why we do not have an emotional connection with Jesus. Like we don't feel love for Him. And the reason why I think that's true in many cases is because of the lack of expression of gratitude robs us of this transcendent relationship. And so I'm going to challenge you to do that this week. Now, let's just bow our heads. And with your head bowed, I want you to take a few moments just to kind of meditate on what that might look like as you begin to put on paper what Jesus has done for you. And I want you to do that as we prepare our hearts to receive communion.